commencing countdown.
3, 2, 1.
This is the Contracting Experience. Connecting government contracting professionals to the world around them through conversations with acquisition influencers, insights into evolving hot topics, and sharing lessons learned from the field.
Welcome, podcast listeners. On this episode of The Contracting Experience, we're privileged to have Mr. Ryan Connell from the Chief Digital and Artificial Intelligence Office, or CDAO. Ryan is the Assistant Director of the Rapid Acquisition Team within the Office of Acquisition Services under the Office of the Undersecretary of War for Research and Engineering. Ryan brings an incredibly timely and vital perspective to the podcast. As the Department of War rapidly integrates artificial intelligence into its enterprise, Ryan is at the absolute forefront of using AI for acquisition. Today, we'll be discussing the journey of taking AI experiments from the lab to the field, the monumental task of making our data AI ready, and how the day-to-day job of our contracting workforce is to a certain extent fundamentally changing as the concept of working smarter rather than working harder has never been more relevant than it is today. So welcome, Ryan. Thanks for joining us.
Awesome. Yeah. Hey, happy to be here.
All right, Ryan. So let's just dive into it. So I'm excited to dive into your world here. The innovation in the Department of War and specifically government acquisition is definitely a hot topic. But taking an idea and turning it into an enterprise tool has to be incredibly difficult. So let's kick things off with a major success story that's pushing the use of AI in acquisition. And I'm referring to ACBOT, which started as an experiment with the CDAO and successfully scaled and transitioned over to AFRL and is now being used across the enterprise. Can you walk us through that origin story and what it took to successfully push an AI experiment like ACBOT across that infamous valley of death?
Yeah, absolutely. So ACBOT, believe it or not, is actually even before my time. So I joined CDAO a little over 2 years ago, and it had just kind of been at the end of its first, you know, pilot prototype phase, if you will. And we really just, you know, it was basically some seed money to see what the art of the possible was in terms of using, you know, specifically Gen AI to start generating contracting documents with some prompts. Like you kind of hit on in the question, we went through some learning, some growing, and AFRL was a great partner. They have an excellent PM who took this under her wing and has scaled it to, you know, they're at 70,000 users across the department, well over hundreds of billions of dollars in like what they've used contract documentation, like solicitations to be able to use their tool to produce. And so just seeing like that type of growth mature on the ATO side, right? Like getting in IL5 CUI environment, all of that stuff, it took some time, but like seeing that adoption across the department, you know, it feels really good to start going, even when we were 2 years ago, where we're like, hey guys, check out this tool, see if you want to use it, like just, you know, trying to encourage the workforce to try a thing and seeing it, you know, actually scale and seemingly work. It's really been powerful. And I think part of it is like just getting that culture right where people feel empowered to go try a thing, right? Like with contracting, it's such a natural fit because like if you use Gen AI to generate a document and it doesn't work the way that you anticipated it, like you've lost 5 minutes of your life, like no big deal, like nothing went wrong. So like it's an easy barrier to entry for, I'll say like new users to be able to try something. And again, if they like it, then obviously they have kind of self-adoption from there.
All right. Excellent. Yeah. I was not aware that 70,000 users already are using it. So that's awesome. And I think if you're not using it, the logical question is why not? Right. Working smarter rather than harder. And again, if it doesn't work the first time you try it, you lost 5 minutes. Right. But you're learning and the tool's learning as well. So it seems like a win-win. So you talk about the transition, and that's a massive win for the entire community. And you mentioned earlier that you're very much into using AI for acquisition, which has expanded far beyond just ACBOT. So what does that broader landscape look like today from your vantage point? Where are we going?
Yeah, I think, you know, Ryan's opinion, I think, you know, it's really hard to create kind of one tool that solves every problem, if you will. And so realizing that kind of that journey for me was, you know, hey, does AI work in a lot of these various, you know, steps during the contracting process? Like, yes, I think we proved that. I think Akbon's a great proof of that. There are other tools that do different aspects that are great proofs of that. I think as we've matured, we've kind of got to the point where, okay, well, I log into this tool and do this thing and generate this document. I log into this, you know, tool and, you know, runs a compliance validator on my contract file. I run to this tool that like scans my post-award contract and then builds me on my pretty dashboard. But like, where's the workflow that goes, you know, step by step? And that's something that like is really hard to create for the department, right? So it's because everyone has their own local policies and procedures and does things their own little flavor, has their own templates, et cetera. And so I think like for me, we've been, you know, super focused on, you know, solving that for CDAO just for ours. And then, you know, we can scale beyond that. And if and when that happens, but it's been this journey of like now getting to the workflow where, you know, you're actually very specifically deciding what elements of that process that you've created can be done by human and which ones need to be done by agents and making those human touch points very purposeful and purpose built, where it's like, you know, a couple inputs, things, you know, a bunch of agents are running the background, come to human, bunch of inputs, agents are running the background and kind of walking you through step by step. And that can be solved with more than one, you know, solution. It doesn't need to be one kind of end-to-end company or one vendor or one commercial product. It can be jointly. And that's kind of the area that we're living in now, where you have four or five different solutions that are kind of building up to be that kind of end-to-end workflow for at least our contracting process.
All right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's fascinating to see how quickly this space is evolving. Right. If early tools focused, like you said, on drafting basic documents or conducting maybe initial market research, what are the new frontiers of AI in acquisition? Are we looking at maybe automated pricing analysis, supply chain risk management, maybe something completely different? What do you think?
A lot of use cases. I mean, even go back 2 years ago, I have not directly answered your question, but I'll get there. So like, even one of the cool use cases with Akbon that wasn't really like a workflow thing, but it was just a neat tool that frankly, like we didn't have NipperGPT or GenAI.mil at the time, right? So it was something that hit a very, I'll say easy problem, which was like, you know, reviewing enterprise user license agreement, a EULA, right? So these commercial companies coming in with these, you know, 80 page EULAs, and just the idea of like, there are probably things that we should work with the IP cadre and like things that we know the government can't accept, you know, specific types of terms. And so to just be able to like create a kind of one-off tool that reviews a EULA and then, you know, basically, you know, it's asking a series of questions against that document, but like highlighting, you know, some risks. Hey, it says this, government can't accept that because you've taught me that. And so highlighting risk for the user. So like little niche things I think are really interesting too. And if you think about a workflow, those can kind of all be added on as you go through the tool of like, do you want us to do this? Do you want me to do that? And so, yeah, I mean, the pricing thing is really interesting. There's an inherent like overlap with market research and pricing, at least in my mind. You know, think about, I'll use your example of supply chain, where it's like, all right, how much should the government, you know, how much should we be spending on supply chain illumination or supply chain vetting? And like, we're not the Department of Defense isn't the only organization to try to solve that problem, right? So like big oil, like there are multiple other industries that have done that. And so just the idea of like having that connective tissue with either internet connection or whatever market sources you have, but being able to find like other examples, non-federal examples of like spend in a specific area. And then, you know, what you want to do, a percentage or whatever you want to do in terms of how you calculate what is reasonable. I mean, all of those things are, I think, in the cards. I think it's really, for us, it's gotten to a point of understanding what human decisions are needed, right? So it's like deciding my official contracting strategy. Like, am I going to do a FAR, you know, Part 12? Am I going to do a 4022 OTA? Like, whatever that decision is, I think that's human. The requirement, of course, is human. The price reasonableness, I think, is a human decision. And then obviously signing the contracts, right? So there's some very specific points that I think can't be or shouldn't be led to an AI or some sort of agent, but the rest, I think the world's your oyster.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And again, great analogy there with reviewing a license agreement. I mean, that's something maybe all of us could do on our spare time there to learn a little bit about AI, right? All those licensing agreements, every time you download an app, you know, are we really reading that stuff? So it might be interesting to put that stuff in AI exactly. And, you know, have that break that down and let you know what your personal risks are there, right? Maybe, sure. maybe just something, sure. you know, instead of just blindly clicking the button, you have assistance now. Right. Well, let's use use that assistance and break it down. And what does this really mean? What are my risks? So I had a great analogy there. So one of the golden rules of AI has got to be that it's only as good as the data feeding it. So historically, our contracting data has been heavily siloed across, you know, different systems and different military branches. So how is the rapid acquisition team tackling the challenge of organizing our data across all functionals and all services to actually make it AI ready?
Yeah, it's interesting. So obviously you and I had some conversation leading up to the podcast, and I saw this question and I was like, oh, so it's a little outside my ballpark, but I think I'll take it anyway for transparency purposes, right? So what I found really interesting, maybe it's kind of a twofold answer. One is, like, if you just think about the contracting workflow, like we've talked about, I have a requirement, you know, start coming up with some sort of strategy, drafting documentation, and then maybe like oversight and compliance, those kind of type functions. Like, it doesn't need this robust data set on the back end of an understanding to be able to do those functions. And that was something I feel like I learned a couple of years ago. And so the things that really need those robust data sets were like market research and potentially pricing. Those two others where certainly there's benefit of, like, if I have a new requirement, if I understand all of the department's requirements, having that level of data visibility is certainly beneficial for you know, avoiding duplication and those kind of things. And then same on the pricing side, having all of that data. But absent those kind of use cases, I think just that normal contracting workflow, I've been honestly just impressed, surprised, whatever the right word is, with just having a couple, you know, well built templates and or a couple, you know, examples of like, here's what a good contracting package looks like. Like, the tools are able to adapt very nicely with only a couple data pieces there. That's kind of part one of the answer. And I think part two is like, as we matured and learned about different solutions and understanding, like, I never was a tech guy, right? I was a contracts guy. And so, like, understanding like the tech stack and cloud and data and platform and all the things, I think I've also realized there's a couple different ways of tackling this problem. When you think about something like vendor lock, right? Like, there's contractual ways to avoid vendor lock, and there's also like system architecture ways of avoiding vendor lock. And the latter becomes interesting from the data point of the question that you asked. And so we found that there are some advantages to sort of breaking up the tech stack. And so having a data layer, you know, when it's DOD or DOW owned or operated data, having it in a DOD or DOW owned or operated environment or data layer, if you will, and separating that from the actual software that's doing the thing, right? So if I'm writing a contract, and at the end of the day, let's say the end result of that is, I've drafted terms and conditions for me to use. Like, I want those terms and conditions, potentially, depending on how you're architecting, to live in the DOD owned operated piece of the environment, so that I have the ability to like move out and always have best of breed with vendors and not have this problem where, like, hey, now my terms and conditions for this contract are now stuck in this vendor's tool. And so there's been some real interesting architecture conversations about that piece of it specifically. And I think the real answer to your question, so sort of break, going to the third element just to bring up is, I think ANS has people that are actually tackling like that exact issue in terms of like, what like massive data sources do we need to look at in terms of like architecture, ontology, like all of those things. I think a big challenge of that is like using or people actually inputting, users actually inputting the data at the front end, right? So like, even some of these big data sources, EDA, or what gets fed into like what we used to be FPDF and SAM, like those are just a result of whatever the user is inputting. And so if you're not inputting like the full contract scope or like, and I know a lot that happens at a lot of offices where you're kind of just inputting like the SF form for the contract itself, but not the actual scope, like it's really hard to then use some sort of tool to understand the scope because you're limited to what's on, you know, a 1 or 2 page paper instead of the entire file itself. So I think there's some challenges with the data sets that people are assuming are the I'll say like the big data sets. But other than that, I mean, I think for me, I've just been, you know, really impressed by how little input was needed to be able to have a pretty neat output and workflow.
All right. Excellent. Yeah. Data quality, that's something we try to preach, you know, constantly. It's again, at some point, the data needs to be initially entered. But a challenge is, okay, I enter it here, but then I also have to enter it here. And then I enter it in this other place. And you're just kind of begging for typos and inconsistencies there. So yeah, hopefully AI can help us in that regard. And then, you know, surprisingly, contracting systems and finance systems might give you a different result. But believe it or not.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So again, maybe AI can help us bridge the gap on that. And then, you know, program management systems, logistics systems, again, just bridging all that data together, it's got to be a powerful end result for us. So organizing the data, that's one hurdle. And then securing it is a whole nother animal. So as we rapidly expand our use of AI tools across the enterprise, how do you balance the urgent need for acquisition speed with the strict security protocols and CUI protection required for the mission? Are you running into any of those challenges?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is behind us at this point, which is good. We've progressed in 2 years, but of course, I mean, that's always been a challenge. I think there's maybe two things to hit. One is just the idea of like the contracting process and a lot of the things that exist. I mean, there are tools today that are made available to the workforce. I mean, publicly available, not just to the workforce, that are not CUI, you know, don't have an ETO, no authorization. But like the information that is being used in that tool. So think about like a market research function, right? If you have a market research tool that is only actively searching through public available information, and you have a safe understanding of like, don't put CUI prompt information or even things that could become CUI prompt information into the input, if you will. Obviously everyone has their own authorizing official and different rules and processes, but like that's a really low risk area where it's like, all right, everything's public effectively is in this tool and in this space. So I think there's certainly opportunities to like pilot and test things in that regard. I do think that as we talk about the different solutions, you know, creating that workflow, kind of, you know, segueing from one capability to another, you start running now a more architecture type conversation about like, should these tools all live in the same environment that can become an ATO environment, or should I think about having separated tools that have their own ATO and their own tech stack? And that's been an area that we've been like focusing on and thinking about a lot too. And so we have some experience with the former of those, where, you know, just we partnered with Space Force. Space Force has a environment that has an IL-5 ATO, and we can just deploy tools within that environment. That makes it really nice, right? So I'm no longer worrying about like the individual ATOs of the individual tech stack. It's the overarching environment that has the ATO. Of course, like doing all the paperwork and EMAF and everything to get it all appropriately done. But like there has been some advantages of leveraging the environments and sharing across the department as well.
All right. Excellent. And that balance is definitely top of our mind, you know, across the workforce. But this isn't just an internal shift, right? It affects our external partners as well. So as the department leverages AI to write requirements and evaluate data, how is this changing the dynamic with our industry partners? So I imagine we're seeing some contractors use AI to write proposals in response to our AI written requirements, sort of creating a scenario of AI talking to AI, right?
Yeah, I love this. So I think, you know, industry probably got there first in terms of the tech, which is not uncommon, right? And so, I mean, I remember a year or two ago, a friend of a friend in industry, you know, was able to, I think it was for a call for like SBIR proposals, but there's an SBIR solicitation. I mean, they have tools that, you know, a couple clicks on their side and they've drafted their proposal because, you know, the data is all there for what their company can offer, et cetera. And so when you make things on the industry side as easy as a couple clicks to bid, you can just naturally assume that there's going to be more bids, right? And so I think the answer to that on the government side isn't going to be hire more people to review more proposals. It needs to be, how do we also use tech to combat or to evaluate this increase in proposals. I think through that process, like there's just this like natural learning that has transpired. I don't know, like, to the extent the entire contracting community understands, like, some of the large language model nuances. We've learned a few things, like the order in which you might ask a proposal to be evaluated may determine the may affect the outcome, where like scoring a proposal might become more narrow as the more proposals you feed a specific tool. So that's like an interesting nuance. And there's also like models. So for example, a proposal that was generated maybe by Grok might be like evaluated better by Grok. And so there's just like some really interesting nuances that are important to consider. But I think we have to, figure that out. And so to the extent that we're using, I'll say like technology assisted evaluation, of course, I mean, there are questions and kind of going back to like the EULA shredder example, there are things that we can do where it's not the full evaluation. Like, you know, here's 100 proposals, go tell me who is the winner. Like, we're not there yet. I don't know that we'll ever be there, but it just in the sense of like, here are some very specific pointed questions that I want you to ask each of these 100 documents and like get answers back. And that can help assist in what will be a human technical evaluation and of course the human decision. So yeah, I think industry got there and I think they're there already. I've asked a few audiences this question where in speaking engagements where I've just basically asked, hey, if you're in industry, how many, you know, raise your hand if you use AI to write your proposals, and like 80% ish of hands go up. And I say, hey, keep your hands up if you're okay with the government using AI to evaluate proposals. And like most of the hands go down. and it's this interesting kind of double standard that we have where, you know, no issues with them using it to provide the bids, but they have issues with the government using them. So I think just understanding, I think transparency is good. I mean, we've released solicitations before that have said, you know, AI is going to be used in to assist the evaluation. We have some, you know, specific language, but things like that and just being transparent about what the process is going to be. So far, we haven't had any issues with that.
No, and that's great. And I love the caveat that, you know, it's not asking AI, hey, who's the winner here? All right, but it's using AI, you know, to ask pointed questions. So you still have that human element. So I think that was a great clarification in there. It's not a blanket, hey, we're using AI to pick a winner. No, we're using AI to help assess the evaluation. So you definitely still have that human interaction. So great point. So let's bring this down to the individual level. So the day-to-day job of a contracting officer is hopefully evolving as AI helps us work smarter instead of harder. So what new skills do you see does the modern acquisition professional need to develop today to thrive alongside these AI teammates, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, I think just like generic problem solving and curiosity, like those are the two that really come to mind. It's probably not what you expected me to say. But I feel like it's just, we talked about like what can go wrong, it takes 5 minutes of your day kind of thing. Like it's that, I think, mindset that is going to rapidly increase the scaling and use of tools like this. And like, I am shocked when I have a conversation with someone, you know, a friend or whatever, like nothing to do with federal work, that just like doesn't have, you know, all the models downloaded on their phones, like ChatGPT and Google, et cetera. Right. Like I can't even fathom that because I'm such an avid user of AI, like in my life. And I think the only reason that we got to that point is you start using it and finding, you know, you're curious about things and finding new ways that it may work or not work for your life. And I think you can apply the same logic to work. And, you know, just the idea of like curiosity, right? Even in GenAI.mil, we've been able to like feed it some data, like the contract, our tracker, like the contract actions that we have coming up, and like who's in Tradewin Solution Marketplace and some like high level information like that. And we created an agentic, you know, read ahead for our front office, right? So, hey, I'm meeting with Acme Corporation. What do I need to know about Acme Corporation? And like, I have 4 sub-agents that are just going out and like, here's what, you know, Google says about them. You know, they have a new CEO. Here's what, you know, they have 2 solutions in Tradewinds. Here's what they are. You know, we have a contract action coming up with them, you know, at the end of the fiscal year, like whatever the things are. And that was just an experiment. Like it was like, hey, I'm going to go type in a thing and see if it works. And it seems like it does work. So kind of out of curiosity and then through a little bit of problem solving and you know, iterating and making it better and better, we now have a solution that is, you know, just a result of 5 minutes and someone asking a question if it would work. Right. So I think that that's, I think the answer is just like allowing yourself that curiosity, allowing yourself to have 5 minutes.
Right. Absolutely. And again, another great analogy there, right? It's like, well, I've never been trained on that. Well, how much training did you get on the other 40 or 50 apps that are sitting on your phone? Right. Did you go to yeah. webinars? Did you get a PowerPoint briefing on all of those? Right. Did you get a user manual, or did you just start experimenting and find out that it's helpful? Right.
Yeah.
So again, great analogy. All right. So with AI touching more complex and legally binding acquisition processes, it brings up the issue of complacency or maybe hallucinations. So how do we train the workforce to maintain their critical thinking skills and properly verify the AI outputs?
Yeah, I mean, it's super interesting, right? Because we're in this, I don't know if I have an answer, but I have thoughts, right? I'll say it, right? So we have this really interesting time that we're living in as contracting professionals, where we know what good market research looks like. We know what a good contract looks like. We know what good terms look like. We know what good deliverables look like, pricing, price justification, like, because we've been trained, I'll say, like, classically trained in contracting, right? We went to DAU, ORU, we learned all the things, we've done it for several years of our lives. And then now we're using that basis of knowledge to help train and create, automated or AI solutions to produce similar quality documents, right? So I know that if I have an AI tool that is writing a contract document, and at the end of the day, I look at it and say, this is great. Like, yes, these are good deliverables. Like, yes, all of the things. And the only reason I can very quickly say yes is because I know what it looks like or what it should look like without any sort of automated or AI solution. I think the challenge that we'll have, and it's maybe an interesting part of the generational time that we're in, is that in, two, three, four, whatever number of years, like the new workforce coming out of college or whatever is going to be given this set of automated tools and won't have lived that experience of what a good market research report, a good contract looks like, because they weren't trained the same way. They won't have necessarily had to go through it and build it themselves, or draft the arrangement themselves. And like, part of me worries about that, but then part of me is, it likens it to things like GPS, right? I probably, try to think of an example. I've been to Washington, D.C., maybe 100 times in my life. And I still have struggle getting around. I still put in my GPS on my phone, how to get to the Pentagon from the metro station, things like that, why don't I know that? And the reason I don't know that is because I have the tool. So I've always been able to rely on the tool to get me from A to B. And I've never had to have, learned it. Whereas, I take someone like my father, I could call him and I'd say like, hey, I found this Getty station or, gas station. He'd be like, oh, take a right. Like, he just knows mentally where we are. And it's because he had to learn it without the tools. Right. And so, I kind of liken it to that, where I'm like, it makes me nervous, but also we have other lived examples of large technology innovations, in our society that have kind of proven that it's been historically okay that I don't know how to get around in Washington, D.C. without a phone, because I always have my phone. And so maybe my worry is mitigated by, the examples that we have historically where this has happened, several other times with technology advances.
Right. No, absolutely. And I think it goes back to Einstein, right? It's hey, don't clutter your mind with something that you can easily look up. All right. So
sure. Yeah.
As an example, how many phone numbers do we have memorized anymore?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Not a whole lot, right? Yeah. Why clutter your mind when you have it at the touch of a button? So great stuff there. So I know we have listeners out there who are eager to lean forward, right? So from a contracting shop that maybe wants to start leveraging AI today, perhaps they don't have a massive budget or custom tools just yet. What's the low-hanging fruit or the best first step they can take?
It's not the spot to go, but it's a spot to go. But on the Tradewinds AI website, we have something called the AI Acquisition Playground. The intent of that was nothing more. It's actually inspired from an Air Force captain who built out a whole web page that was all contracting tools for AI stuff. Did it on his own time, own money. I think got his hand slapped a little bit, but we're past it. And when I came to CDO 2 years ago, I was like, hey, I reached out. I was like, I think you can kind of create the thing that you kind of wanted. You were trying to create. But in more an official capacity, obviously very different from what his vision was. But the idea for us was just let's see if we can put a group hug around all of the things that exist that the average acquisition professional can use, without them needing to spend any money. Like that was the really the vision for that landing page. And so things like ACBOT is a great example, right? Like the way that ACBOT business is structured, like there are users that are paid users that have a whole bunch of additional features. And then there are the rest of anyone that's a .mil has access to use ACBOT in its, I'll say like basic form. And I'm happy to put someone in touch with the PM for the details on that. But that's an example. Like nothing stops the average user from going to ACBOT that I'm aware of, going to ACBOT and trying something, one of the tools, drafting a document, et cetera. I think GenAI.mil is another obvious example. While that's just a basic large language model, even again, like just the cost of it is 5 minutes. I will go into GenAI.mil and put in what I'll consider to be the basics of a contract file. And I live in the OTA world, but we have a prototype agreement, your terms and conditions, and like a written determination, which would be like a basic DNF. Those three things. And then someone on my team has written this kind of lengthy prompt, but it's basically evaluating my entire contract file for, is it statutorily acceptable? Are you breaking any laws? Are you breaking any policy? Does it align with our current templates? Highlight any risk areas, any discrepancies, like all of those things that you'd expect those prompts to have asked. And like, that's my, if you look at an org chart, my policy person is GenAI.mil, right? Like that's how I've solutioned it here. Of course there's some human oversight, but like the idea of just, again, like just, these are tools everyone has access to, right? So just like try to find that use case that works for your current policies and procedures. And like, again, I think that just, the cost is 5 minutes. So it's just encouraging people to try.
Right. No, absolutely. And there's this kind of intimidating term out there, right? Prompt engineering, right? It makes you sound like, you have to go to school. It's just asking questions, right? I mean, kind of like in a, you're talking to an inquisitive, third grader, right? You ask a question. Sure. If you don't quite get the response you want, you follow up question, right? Follow up question, right? They don't cost anything.
Right. And there's success even in just like you attempt to do your best prompt but then enter above it and write like, hey, revise this prompt so that I get the outcomes that I'm looking for. And here are those outcomes. Right. And like, you can ask the tool to give you a better prompt before you use the prompt, which is hilarious, but it works. I'll offer that.
No, great. And then just piggybacking, getting on the risk of hallucinations, right? And that I think it just undermines the importance of having that domain knowledge, right? If something that it's just the importance of understanding our craft, right? Instead of totally relying on AI, having that domain knowledge to kind of recognize when something just isn't quite right, right? Kind of like your GPS. If it's got you taking you right, downtown through Washington, D.C. at rush hour, you might have the domain knowledge to realize that might not be the best route. Right. So things like that. So anyway,
I was going to say like the hallucination thing is interesting, but like one of, if you're doing like market research or something where you're like actually bringing in outside sources, kind of an easy fix is like having it, provided sources of information. Right. So that's part of your prompt that can go in and like, give me, other examples in federal government where like this type of requirement exists, and cite the examples with links and like something like that. Right. And then all of a sudden now you can have some human oversight and just like validate that those links are real and the information that it provided in that summary is actually from those links.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The old trust but verify. Right. Excellent.
Exactly.
So Ryan, this is great advice for right now. So, but looking a few years down the road, how fundamentally different will the contracting experience be for the average, Department of War acquisition professional in say 2030, once these AI ecosystems mature a little further? Where do you think we're going?
It is super interesting to think about. I mean, we kind of hit it a little bit earlier with the idea that if AI is, helping industry create a proposal and AI is performing the evaluation, it's like, why are we even proposing and evaluating it? Like that's just silly at that point, right? So the fundamentals of the FAR as we know it and like doing business have the ability to just completely overhaul. I think there's, right? So just even in that example, it's like, okay, if we're not going to, there's no point in proposing and evaluating if it's just AI, agents doing it on behalf of humans. And so like kind of conceptualizing what that could look like if you kind of moved left and right on a schedule, it's like, okay, well then if there's no bid, there's probably no solicitation. And if there's no solicitation, is there a requirement or is AI deciding what his department needs? And then automatically, like, so there could be a future where AI is deciding what the department needs at a department level, but then, you know, bringing it down at a finite level for each particular user. And then that could effectively automatically be somehow matchmaking with an industry partner, and automatically writing up that business deal and automatically performing that business deal. And then ultimately what really matters outside of contracting is like the, you know, warfighter getting the thing that they need. And so to the extent that you just go from like AI predicting the need to then the warfighter getting the thing they need, and like you're thinking about it that way, like the entire FAR as we know it, I feel like is in jeopardy of needing to be overhauled. And I don't think that's a light comment. I maybe revolutionary FAR overhaul that we just had, you know, is good for now. But I think that if you think about the capability of some of this automation that we're talking about, like there is ripe ability to have like a complete overhaul. You know, I don't know. That's not even necessarily a prediction. It's just like a could be case. But I think it's an interesting one to think about.
No, absolutely. I mean, we're talking about changing the rules of the game. I mean, actually, the entire game, if you want to call it that, is changing, right? It's, you know, absolutely transformation. So fascinating stuff. So, Ryan, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and insights here on the podcast. Your perspective on the future of our profession, exactly what our listeners need to hear right now. And it's been a great conversation, and I'm grateful you could join us. Do you have any parting shots or other words of wisdom to leave our listeners with?
I mean, I think, you know, maybe two. One is, you know, I say this usually when I'm speaking, this is the worst it's going to be, like in terms of how we automate our processes. I recall when I first started working for the Air Force, a gentleman who was near retirement at the time was reminding me how he conducted cost and price analysis on, you know, like graphing paper and a pencil and a ruler, and was drawing out like a CPIF incentive line, and, you know, by hand. And I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, like that's crazy. Like, don't you know how to use Excel kind of thing? Right. And then, you know, now, you know, at some point I'm going to be the old guy at work still. And, people are going to be like, wait, you wrote contracts? Like what's wrong with you? You know? And so I think just like understanding that where we are in that tech transition is huge. Cause it really is. I think, you know, today is, you know, the worst. It's only going to get better. It's kind of the norm. And that's thing one. And I think two would just be, you know, just worst thing you have to lose is the 5 minutes. So just try it. Be curious, play with it. We are so beneficial at the world of contracting in terms of just like, you have so much flexibility to try things, without any impact other than your loss of 5 minutes. And so like, why not? Right. I think it's only worth, you giving yourself the time to learn and explore.
No, excellent, Ryan. Thanks again. That's a couple great pieces of advice there to wrap things up. So on behalf of the Contracting Experience Podcast, all of our listeners and subscribers, thank you so much for joining us today, Ryan. It's been an absolute pleasure having you.
Awesome. Had a blast. Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
All right. And as always, a huge thanks to all of our podcast listeners, followers, and subscribers. If you have any feedback, suggestions for topics, or future guests you would like to hear on the podcast, you can submit those via email to thecontractingexperience@gmail.com. As a reminder, you can subscribe to the podcast from any of your podcast listening platforms. Be sure to subscribe to receive updates and automatic downloads so you don't miss a single episode. I'm your host, Rob Lorton, from the AFMC Contracting Digital Division, and I hope you can join us again on our upcoming episodes. Until then, stay tuned and stay connected.